quit the music business in 1978, you said you wouldn't play anymore, wouldn't sing anymore. You made a dramatic change.
Although I was never quite as explicit as saying never. I used to add the word inshallah. If God wills.
Okay.
Obviously, when I became a Muslim, I tried to adjust my life according to Islam. And the first thing you do is you learn how to pray. However, the Quran never mentioned anything about music. But after a while, as I spoke to more and more scholars, you know, some of them gave me doubts about this profession, you know, because, and it's true that most of the profession is connected to, you know, things which are totally un-Islamic, you know, sex, drugs, I mean, the here and now, never thinking about tomorrow, you know, competition. I mean, if you get into the music, racing, pride, greed, I mean, all these things. So it's obvious that it is tainted. Not only that, there was some doubt about using musical instruments. So I decided, for the sake of my religion, I'm not going to risk it. I said, until I know better, I'll follow the safe course. And that's what I did. But there was always the feeling within me that, you know, and in fact, you're supposed to, when you read the Quran, you must read it in a beautiful way. Use your voice in the best way. And that's really what we find in the Muslim world, that there is music, but it's different. I remember I was in Morocco at one time. It was before I was a Muslim. I was, you know, doing the usual trail to Marrakesh, as everyone was doing, including Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young. And I remember listening to some singing in the marketplace at night. And I said to them, "What kind of music is that?" He said, "That's music for God." I never heard anything like that before, because usually, you know, we're playing for an audience. You know, we can see it, it's tangible. They pay their money, they get their tickets. Here, you're praying, you're playing for God. So I understood after a while that there is a different kind of music. It may not be so sensational. It may not be so grabbing to certain people who want a thumping beat and, you know, playing a simple rap disco song. But for those who are interested, there is music there.
Yeah. If we go back in time, how was life as a, you know, a big, big pop star? How was that life?
Full of, you might say, highs and lows, as far as the experience is concerned. You know, to actually become known, recognizable in the street is quite shock. You know, not shock, really. It's kind of a nice experience, if you like. On the other hand, there's the sort of the downside of that is that people see you for what they see you as, and oftentimes you're created in an image that is not really you, and so you have to live up to this image, and that's difficult, and that's what I think most people have problems with.
You said once that they made me larger than life, therefore I had to live larger than life. What did you mean by that?
Yes, I think that the media has an amazing way of focusing and magnifying a personality to the point where people can adore that personality. They could do the opposite, of course. They can start to make him look venomous and evil, and then, you know, you get the opposite. So I suppose that these are the things that I had to contend with. Of course, I was trying to make them as, I was encouraging them to make me as big as possible. At the same time, then I'd have to be that person. And that would be where, of course, humanity comes in. You know, we're human, and we're susceptible to all sorts of problems and downsides.
You played with Jimi Hendrix, didn't you? Same concerts he did. How was that?
Jimmy was Jimmy.
In what way?
I think Jimmy was, in a way, unfortunately, a victim of his own image making. And he was a very quiet man, basically. But he had to make it. And the only one way he could do it was to sensationalize everything he did, including his hair and his way of playing guitar and everything. And we know how he ended up, which is unfortunate.
A lot of rock stars from in that period did that. They ended up on the wrong side, or they died, or went crazy. I mean, Jim Morrison, Jimi Hendrix.
That's right, and one may say that getting into the music business might be might show that you have a tendency to madness. But there are those who came out and have maintained a certain dignity or posture, which people can still relate to as a human being. And I suppose, I hope that I'm one of them.
What would you say if I say that, for example, a song like Father and Son, does it bother you that I still listen to that song and enjoy it?
No, not at all. I mean, I think Father and Son is an interesting song. It could be interpreted in many different ways. I mean, I could look at it now from a religious point of view, as a Muslim, believing in the struggle of sometimes looking at the life differently from our parents.
So that means that you could sing that song today?
The problem would be, you could, I mean, but the problem would be its association with past me as I was. Now, that's a gap which one has to take into consideration. So, you know, you couldn't exactly fit me into the same jeans that I wore in those days. I'd feel uncomfortable. And the same might be said for sort of singing a song, which I sang in those days. Although, I might read the words, I might even sing the song without accompaniment sometimes. Different context, different time.
Have you ever sung that song again?
I think I must have done to my... My children kind of listen, you know, sometimes to my albums, and I don't stop them from doing that, and because I think it's a part of the education, knowing who their father was.
Mm.
What did I do in those 60s? Not the war, but the 60s.
Yeah.
So that's okay, and maybe I've sung it once or twice.
Well, how would you put it? The turning point for your life or your career? I read somewhere that you almost drowned on Malibu Beach in California.
At that moment, in the sea, it wasn't a very good time to swim, because nobody told me, like, mad dogs and Englishmen go out in midday sun. They also go out swimming at a certain time in Malibu, without the dog. So I was there swimming, and suddenly I realized that this is not the best time to go swimming. And all of a sudden, I felt myself, you know, being dragged by the current outwards into the Pacific. All of a sudden, I saw life disappearing. And even though I could see my manager, he was on the shore, you know, a very small little figure, couldn't do anything. But who could do anything? And without even a hesitation thought, immediately I turned to God. And I said, "Oh God, if you save me, I'll work for you." And at that moment, a wave turned. And suddenly I was being thrown forward. It wasn't a big wave. It's not like a miracle, you know, 50-foot wave, but it was enough for me to get back. And it came at that exact moment that I asked for it. And so the skeptic might say, coincidence. But for me, at that moment, it was the answer.
It's also an old saying that you will never find a disbeliever on a sinking ship.
Exactly. Everybody finds their faith at that moment. But then what to do? Because then I got back to land, dried myself, greatly relieved, but now what to do? And then, of course, later came the answer.
For a whole long time did you wait till you found the answer?
I'm not sure how long it was, but my brother had visited Jerusalem some time. I think it was in 1975. And he was very impressed. He suddenly discovered this other religion in Jerusalem. Everybody thinks, you know, and where Jesus walked, and the Jewish connection with Jerusalem, etc. But then he discovered Islam. And he found a wonderful feeling amongst the Muslims in the places of prayer, in the mosques. And then when he came back, he saw there was a festival here, and they were selling books about Islam, Islam festival. And he decided to buy me a present, the Quran. And he knew that I was doing a lot of the reading, you know, metaphysical books and et cetera, et cetera.
You were into Eastern mysticism. You tried everything, tarot cards, astrology, Buddhism.
That's right.
And you even read the Bible without finding any answers.
That's right, because my brother knew that I'd been, you know, he knew I was going through all these books, leafing my way through scriptures and trying to relate. I was a vegetarian. I mean, I was believing in stars. I had a rabbit's foot. I wouldn't go on a bus 13. I mean, I had lots of ideas about how to save myself. A little cross, everything. But I'd never studied Islam. For some reason, there was always an aversion to looking at anything Islamic. And that, I think, is one of the greatest problems we have in the West, is because of perhaps history, whatever the reason, particularly in my case, because my father was Greek Orthodox. And, of course, the Greek Orthodox, you're looking at the Turks, and the Turks are Muslims, so therefore nothing to do with Islam at all was ever mentioned. So I never even bothered. But here it was, now I was getting the Quran. And that was really the beginning. I mean, that was where my education, I think, started, at least being able to discover the answers to those big questions that I had so much earlier on in my life.
And now you contributed to a concert in Bosnia, and it's coming out a record in February, March here in England, and wrote two of the songs, and one of the songs you're actually singing on the record. It's called The Little Ones, and it's dedicated to the children after the massacre in Dunblane and children who died in Bosnia. Why did you decide to honor two new songs?
Well, The Little Ones, in a way, was written for the children, for the memory of the children who die in any situation. And in fact, I called it The Little Ones of Sarajevo and Dunblane, because here were two quite clear examples of how tragedy befalls children in war and in madness. And so I wrote that for the purpose of highlighting, and I've always been interested in children. I mean, I've always been a child. I think every human being somehow is still a child, and I love to stay close to them. And I wanted to explain that for those who feel tragic about the departure of children from this earth, shouldn't, because for children the playground of the hereafter is much bigger and much more enjoyable, and so therefore the hope aspect was necessary, especially in times when people are facing such devastating horrors and tragic stories. You need to know what the hope is beyond the mess and chaos of this world. Oh, they've killed all the little ones while their faces still smile. With their guns and the fury, they erase their young lives. No longer to laugh, no longer to be a child. Oh, they've killed all the little ones while their faces still smile. Now they're burying the little ones, and they're making a grave deep, so the world cannot see that tonight we may sleep. While they wash away the blood, the mothers all weep. Oh, they're burying the little ones, and they're making the grave deep. Oh, they're burying the little ones, and they're making the grave deep. Yes, where will the devils go when that day comes, when the angels drag them out to face the little ones? Oh, they've killed all the little ones
with their eyes open wide. There was nothing to help them on the day that they died. No bed to run under, no cover to hide. Oh, they've killed all the little ones with their eyes open wide. They'll be raising the little ones with no sin to atone. In the light of high heaven, they will sit on tall thrones, where playtime lasts forever, and God's mercy never ends. They'll be raising the little ones, and they'll all be best friends. They'll be raising the little ones, and they'll all be best friends.